The online video of Terry and Aaron's wedding starts out like a million others. Ushers in black coats and ties escort guests to their seats. The well-dressed crowd smiles and waits. Then things take a turn. Up front, a smoke machine cranks up and dance club lighting starts to flash. The wedding procession becomes a series of dramatic entrances and showy dance moves as each groomsman and bridesmaid performs to a different song as they make their way down the aisle. The whole thing is topped off with the bride's entrance, which involves busting a few moves with her father, then a choreographed number with all the bridesmaids and the flower girl. But even in this most untraditional of weddings, some things just don't change.
You take Terry Lynn.
I do.
Do you take Aaron?
I do.
Amen. You may now kiss the bride.
Weddings, some weddings at least, are certainly different than they used to be, but so too is marriage itself. And here in the Midwest and around the world, the meaning and nature of marriage is still changing, some would say as fast as ever before. This is KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Deborah Smith, good morning.
Morning.
You are a sociologist. You chair the department here at UMKC. You've been studying marriage and families for, well, all your life, I guess. So you can answer this question for us. What is marriage anyway?
Well, there's a legal aspect to it. There's frequently a religious aspect to it, and certainly there's a social aspect to it. And when we think about the legal aspect of it, that just sort of gives you a lot of different rights that other people who are just together don't have. That's one of the big issues with same-sex marriage that was talked about. I mean, we've been having the conversation for social scientists for the last 15, 20 years, but the idea that, you know, your loved one is in the emergency room and you might have been that person's partner for 20 years, but you're not allowed into the emergency room because you're not a spouse.
So that legal aspect is one really important aspect of what marriage means, and it's always meant, right?
Right.
What else, though? You said there's other aspects.
Well, I was just listening to this about what was going on with that wedding. Very interesting. And it just tells me that we've become much more individualistic, even when we talk about something as sort of traditional as marriage, that everybody's putting their own spin on it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's that you can have marriages in lots of different ways compared to, say, either years ago or other more traditional societies where people would have arranged marriages. You know, now you have to pick the person. You have to figure it out. This person has to be somebody that you like. You know, if you think about arranged marriages, you don't even see the person until you're at the altar.
Right. It does seem like the most basic element of marriage that we think about is that it's a consensual relationship. But in fact, that hasn't always been the case.
No, ultimately, marriage is it started as an economic institution. It started as the combining of families, and certainly pooling economic resources is a critical component of what we think of as a marriage. And if you look at people that live together versus people who are married, their finances look quite different. People who are in a sexually bonded relationship where they just live together look more like your roommate that you had in college in terms of how you split the bills versus when you're married, that the pooling of the resources happens a lot. And a real quick example is that when I first moved to Kansas City, I had to immediately get life insurance with my institution, and I put my nieces as my beneficiary because I was single. But then when my then boyfriend, now husband, moved in with me, I didn't change the beneficiaries until we got married.
Which would have been bad news for your boyfriend if there'd been a need.
Right. But he wasn't my family at that point, right? So it's a different way of thinking about things.
Well, and I guess that maybe is sort of the question, is what makes someone family? Marriage is one marker that someone has that relationship. But isn't it possible to have that family relationship without marriage? There was a time where we would have said no, but has that changed?
The textbook I use when I teach this class is by Andrew Cherlin. He's a family sociologist at Johns Hopkins, and I love it because he gives us two definitions of the family. The first is the public family, and that's the family that socializes. Everybody takes care of them when they are sick, and so it's this idea of raising the next generation. So the public family is making sure that people have a safe place to be an adult or an older person who needs caregiving or a younger person who is growing up. But the private family is the love and affection component of it. So you can think about a divorced family. You can have like a public family component and a private family component where that child isn't necessarily living with dad usually, but he's still providing economic resources. But at the private family, maybe mom is remarried, dad is remarried. And so they are both part of two different types of families.
And do you feel like that ability to distinguish between the private meaning of family or marriage and the public meaning of it, is that a pretty recent development? Would those at one point have been kind of one and the same?
For sure. It would definitely be one and the same. A big part of the changes in family has been the pill in 1960 with contraception, where we really have separated sex from reproduction. And so the idea of, Johnny and Susie sitting in a tree, KSSING, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes baby in the baby carriage.
That was well done.
Thank you. It's all now. First, maybe there's the marriage. First, maybe there's the baby. Then there's the love. Then there's the marriage, or maybe it's a marriage to somebody else. So it's all individual now. Everybody gets to make their own what we call life course decisions, and it doesn't have to be lockstep. And indeed, a lot of folks end up having children prior to marriage, mm-hmm. and there are different decision making processes around who am I willing to have a kid with versus who am I willing to marry.
And you locate the point of that change with the development of easily accessible contraception in the 60s. Has it continued to evolve since that point, though? I mean, if I asked you this question 30 years ago, would it be different? If I asked you 5 years ago, would it be different?
Well, certainly you have the pill, and then you have the women's movement that comes up. And right now, I call them students, but the sort of the 20s, the millennials, they really live through a lot of parents' divorce. And so they are waiting to get married. And the other issue is that because you don't have to be married to have sex in the United States, you sort of skip your first marriage, if you will. Like maybe you got married in your 20s and then 5 years later, the only thing you had to deal with was separating the stereo equipment and the wedding gifts, and then you moved on. And we actually used to call them starter marriages in family science. But now people just don't—they just skip that part, right?
They just live together. There's no pressure to be married,
right? You don't have to be married. Now in the United States, it's still bad to have extramarital sex. We don't like that. Like once you've made the decision, you really do need to stick with that person. And premarital sex, it's not okay to have a one-night stand. Right. So there has to be affection involved in sex, but it doesn't have to be only in the institution of marriage. About half of marriages have a living together component of it prior to.
We're curious what our listeners think about marriage and especially about the future of marriage. Do you plan to get married? Do you think your kids will get married? Have they already gotten married? What do you think it'll look like 30 years from now? Join the conversation by calling us at 816-235-2888, or you can tweet at us at KCURCST. Let's bring in Catherine Hogan. She's owner of The Vow Exchange. Morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
So how do you describe to people what you do?
The elevator speech that I give is that The Vow Exchange is sort of a Vegas wedding chapel gone Midwestern. Seems to be about the most clear-cut way of saying it.
Then you do not find that an offensive description because
no,
you offered it yourself.
Not at all.
What happens at the Vow Exchange?
Yeah, so at The Vow Exchange, we have couples come in and they are looking for a smaller wedding celebration. We focus mainly on the wedding ceremony itself, and our events are generally pretty brief. We only have, it's only about 90 minutes long, and in 90 minutes, it's enough time for us to marry the couple, take some photos, and they can enjoy their time before going off for a really nice, you know, celebration afterwards.
You did not start out as a wedding planner or an event coordinator. How did you get into this?
Actually, my husband and I renewed our vows in Vegas. So I do have Vegas to thank for the idea. But we went to Vegas to renew our vows at our 10th wedding anniversary. And when I went through the whole process, I was like, you know what? This is really easy and really low stress. And when it really hit me was when I was actually saying my vows, renewing them with Mel, my husband, and I was completely overrun with emotion. And I thought, wow, I'm actually able to be in the moment. And that was pretty special and pretty great. At my actual wedding 10 years previous, when it was at, you know, good old Catholic traditional wedding, about 70 guests, it was so overwhelming. I was honestly, my head was just spinning with everything that was going on. It was really hard to stay focused with and be in the moment. So,
and so how, obviously you're busy enough that the business is is still going.
Yes.
What are these couples coming to you looking for, do you think?
Oh, they're looking for simplicity. Honestly, that's really what it is. A lot of our couples, they are busy people. They are oftentimes they have families, like Debbie said, and they don't have the extra income. They don't have the extra time to, you know, to throw that big shebang. And they want something where it's kind of all packaged up, ready to go. It looks nice. It feels nice. It gives them some opportunity to express a little bit of their personal preferences and their personality. But overall, they can just walk in and get married and have a lovely time.
And obviously, you're talking with them about the ceremony, the thing that's going to happen on that day. Mm-hmm. What do you think that says, these sorts of conversations about the marriage that they anticipate coming after that day?
Meaning, like, the effort that you put into the celebration is equated to the effort in your marriage?
Do you think that's the case?
Oh, no, not at all. I think, you know, it's a celebration. And that's like saying, you know, a Thanksgiving dinner at home with grandma where you eat on your paper plates and you eat on your lap, that's somehow less special than the grandma's table that has the fine china or something, you know, more formal and to do. It's about the people that you're with. That's what makes it special. And I don't think that those two are related. In fact, I find that it might even be more of a couple's deciding what their actual priorities are in the grand scheme of life. Instead of spending that $20,000 plus on a wedding, they might want to buy a house for their family that they're looking to build and share it with. So,
another
difference. Really responsible, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes sense as it reflects something about how they plan to use their resources and
yes,
maybe what their priorities are. Do you sense that it says something different too about kind of what their motivation is for getting married? So to use your own story, you got married in a church in a traditional ceremony.
Yes.
Before. That's very different than reaffirming your vows in a Las Vegas
yeah.
wedding chapel.
Yes.
Is there something changing about the nature of how you think about marriage from 10 years before?
In terms of,
well, you were very traditional and in a church before, and now it was a different setting.
Well, I don't know. I think at the core of it, kind of like Deborah was saying, that it's really just about sort of bringing a family together. And in my personal experience, my husband and I, we don't have children. He is my family. And that's kind of, you know, that's what takes my focus and energy, and everything my life is built around that. So it was traditional, you know, now 13 years ago. I'm Catholic. So, you know, you take the girl out of the Catholic Church, you can't take the Catholic Church out of the girl. But when it came to renewing our vows, we could be a little bit more playful and have fun with it. But what was interesting is that when I could kind of let those traditions go and kind of just go with it, it was actually a lot more fun. And like I said, maybe a little bit more liberating in that I didn't have so many traditions to keep up with.
So it was different, but it wasn't less meaningful.
Right.
Yeah. Deborah, when you hear about a wedding venue and a story like Catherine's, what does that make you think?
It just encapsulates the changes that we think of in marriages and weddings. Number one, I'm super happy to hear that people want to buy a house rather than a $20,000 wedding, because since economics is what I talk about a lot in the families. But it's a perfect example of changing from the institution of marriage to the relationship itself, like focusing on it. It makes a lot of sense that in the Catholic Church, it's about the joining together, and it is very staid and it's very prescribed. And been to a lot of Catholic weddings, been to a lot of weddings, been a lot of bridesmaids. So like it all kind of looks the same and seems maybe a little artificial because this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And so this opportunity to renew your vows or do it as something a little bit informal kind of reflects the way that we live our lives today, that we don't, you know, get dressed up to go to work even as much as we would. So just the informality of it really focuses the experience on the couple rather than the institution of marriage.
We're talking about that institution and its changing or not so changing nature. 816-235-2888 is the number to call to weigh in on what you think is the state of marriage and what you think it might be in the future. 235-2888. Let's talk to Stephen in Kansas City, Missouri. Hello, Stephen.
Hey.
What is marriage for you?
Well, marriage for me, you know, my wife and I got married a little later in life. We got married when I was 27, but
so later than it used to be, but not so unusual these days.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's the only woman I've ever kissed. I waited my whole life to we did kiss before marriage, but we waited to have sex till after marriage, and we really find there's some sacredness there, and because we are really religious, that fits. But as far as the institution itself goes, I kind of see it devolving to a point where you might have this sort of great love relationship with intimacy and beautifulness, if you will, outside of the context of marriage for those who maybe aren't as religious, and the institution itself sort of devolving back to where it would have been during the Middle Ages, and, you know, maybe in 25 to 50 years where it's purely financial and related around social status, kind of one of those things reserved for maybe the upper class, and it becoming this really formal thing where, you know, you almost get married to provide for your other family.
Yeah, so Stephen, I want to ask you a question. The fact that you and your wife waited to have sex until you were married, do you think that changed kind of or did that say something about what you believe marriage to be?
Absolutely.
What does it say?
So for us, we're Christians, and we believe that the institution of marriage was created by God for a man and a woman to learn more about themselves and to become more like God.
So it was about something that you would learn from each other and to model something in the relationship about something that was true.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm going to put you on hold here, Stephen. I want to talk with our guest, Deborah Smith, a little bit about that. She's a sociologist. To what extent does that understanding of marriage reflect a traditional view? And do you see that changing, Deborah?
I think that what the caller spoke about was an excellent example of looking at the different natures of marriage. Like from a religious context, marriage is a covenant. It is just like the covenant that God had in the tradition of Christianity and Judaism, of a covenant between God and the people. And so the covenant between the man and the woman in a traditional marriage is like it's set. Then versus in the legal ideology, it's more of a contract. Mm-hmm. So and a little bit more, say, if you sort of screw up, then that's all there is to it. And we can go ahead in our separate ways. Average length of marriage in the United States is 7 years now.
Well, it was interesting to hear Stephen say that he thinks marriage will continue to evolve and that there will be the possibility of something beautiful and real and true that is not connected with marriage,
right.
But that marriage will still exist, but it will be something that looks a lot like an older view of marriage.
He should come talk to my class because he did a really great job. This is what's happening is that it used to be that women didn't get college degrees but married a man that did, and now We look for the person who to have the same level of education as we do. So there's actually this double advantage now where people are getting educated and married. And so he's absolutely right that it is kind of moving. And people have always had cohabitation. It's just back in the Middle Ages, like you said, it was for people that didn't have a lot of economic institutions, economic assets to share.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation about what marriage has been and what it's becoming. With big changes in law and practice, how much is that changing what marriage at its heart is? I'm Brian Ellison. Stick around for more of KCUR Central Standard in just a minute. It's KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about marriage and how it's changed and how it's changing. It's part of KCUR's 3030 Vision series, where we look at Kansas City's past to help reimagine its future. We want to hear from you about this. Have you recently gotten married? Why in the world would you do that? Or, if you're deciding against marriage, why not? Who will be getting married 30 years from now and what will be their reasons? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. We're still here with sociology professor Deborah Smith and wedding venue operator Catherine Hogan, but joining us now is also Daniel Osterhaus. Hi, Daniel.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty well.
So you're not married.
No, I am not.
Is that something that you think is important?
I am not married. I've never felt a lot of pressure to be married, but also recently, marriage has only just become available to me. I am a gay man. And so, you know, marriage has only really been legal and an option for me within, you know, just over the last year.
And was it important to you as a gay man, as you watched that debate sort of playing out nationwide leading up to the Supreme Court decision, was that important for you to see that that became legal?
It was. A lot of it, my experience growing up too, I have an uncle who has been with his partner for 25 years, and they've been in a committed relationship with each other. And growing up, I had that experience, you know, so in a lot of ways, there's been arguments that, you know, traditional marriage is not, you know, it should be kept the same, that gay individuals don't value that same institution. And I think that we've proven that that is incorrect, that thought is incorrect, that a lot of the couples that were getting married right after it became legalized were couples that had been together 20, 30, 60 years. They finally wanted to show their commitment through marriage. But there, as Deborah said, the legal aspect is very important as well. My uncle has been HIV positive for 25 years. And as a result, his partner has had to jump through legal legal hoops to, be there for his partner.
Do you feel like, Daniel, that in the couples you know, maybe even your uncle, it was just necessary for it to be legal so they could have these legal benefits of being married? Or is there something about the relationship that changed or can be different because marriage and something that is called marriage is available?
I think it can for some individuals, but I think because of the fact that it has only really been an option for a lot of LGBT individuals, that we've also not felt the need to define our relationship as being committed to each other through the institution of marriage, being a married individual, because, you know, it hasn't really been an option for us. And so we had to go and blend our families, as we discussed, make our own families and commit to each other outside of that. And then when it became legal, you know, there was that aspect to make that next step and show to the world that we are just as committed to each other as a heterosexual couple is.
And do you feel like now that the option is available, are same-sex couples of men or of women seeking this out for the same reasons that you think heterosexual couples sought it out before?
I do. I think, though, but you, as you know, the generations change, and you know, I am a millennial, as Deborah had briefly discussed. I think both for homosexual couples and heterosexual couples, the need to show that we are committed through marriage is not as great. I think that as the institution has changed, we are showing that we don't feel that pressure to get married, to prove that we are committed to each other, to prove that we are a family. I think that, you know, I definitely recognize that there is the religious component of marriage and that, you know, there was that basis. But the importance is that in today's society, the government is very much involved in marriage and the institution. And as a result of that involvement, you have to think of the legal aspects as well. And that's why it was so important for gay marriage to be legalized.
Yeah, and I do need to disclose for our listeners, I work here at KCUR as my part-time work. The other part of my time, I'm an advocate for LGBT inclusion and including marriage within my own religious tradition. So that is something that listeners may want to know as I go on with this conversation. But let me ask you, Deborah Smith, as you listen to Daniel talk about why marriage was important for him as a gay man, do you think that the changes in the law and in sort of societal acceptance around same-sex marriage have had an impact on the institution of marriage more broadly?
I think it's had more of an impact on how we perceive marriage as disaggregating sort of maybe the religious component of it and the personal component of it and the legal component of it. The term that we use in sociology is structural lag, so that our structures haven't kept up with the way people live their lives. Like, your uncle was in a committed relationship for, you know, 30 years. Everybody can point to gay couples that they've known that have been in this long-term relationship for a very long time. It's just that our laws hadn't kept up, mm-hmm. right? And so for those of us who've been noticing this, like, it's been kind of fast, if you really think about it, and because gay couples have existed all along. It used to be that the relationship was just between two people, and now the relationship is between two people and the state. And yet, on the other hand, heterosexual couples aren't feeling the need to have the state part of their couples either, and they just cohabitate.
It does feel like we're putting a lot on sort of the legal importance of marriage, the rights that come with being married. But and maybe there's a question for you, Catherine, because you watch these families and these groups of friends, fairly small groups of family and friends in your venue come together. Isn't there also something important about that public act of making these promises in front of family and friends and as we used to say, God and everybody, that beyond just the legal benefits you get, that is different than if you were just cohabitating?
Oh, absolutely. And we do have actually several couples who are actually officially married, have gone to the courthouse, gotten the legal documents. They needed it for one reason or another, but they still very much want to make that a celebration. And oftentimes they'll celebrate the wedding, you know, at the vow exchange, and they'll kind of tell us on the side, like, my family doesn't know that we're actually already married, but so we're just going to pretend like this is the real deal.
It's really fun. What happens in the wedding, the vow exchange stays at the vow exchange.
Kinda, yeah. So, and of course, we're happy to keep that secret, but it is a lot of fun to see, you know, those families together, celebrate that together. It definitely seems to be almost like a rite of passage, almost the way that you would celebrate the coming of a new baby in a family. It's a momentous, you know, happy thing when you're, you know, creating a family through that union. It's very exciting and fun.
We are getting a lot of calls at 816-235-2888, and we'll try to get to a few more of them here. Let's talk to Bob in Overland Park. Hello, Bob.
Hi.
What do you think about marriage?
I think that the government should totally get out of it. I think it should be a cultural and religious thing, and the reason I think the government should get out of it is because it's discriminatory. The government's interest should be raising, nurturing, and educating children, and the law should attend to that. As I had said before, that marriage should be totally cultural and religious. I was raised by older siblings. Of course, they weren't have sex and didn't get married, but because they couldn't do that, I was denied the benefits, and they were denied the benefits of that. Other people who are not going to have children get the benefits from the government for marriage, and it seems to me totally ridiculous.
Hmm.
I think that the government should totally and immediately get out of the marriage situation.
Okay, well,
and that's about it.
Appreciate the comments, Bob. Thanks so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
I mean, Bob makes an interesting argument. There is one reason why marriage exists as this civil entity is to sort of financially incentivize a certain model of community, where particularly where traditionally people were raising children. He's suggesting incentivize the childbearing and not the marriage. What do you think, Daniel?
You know, I actually tend to personally agree with that statement that, you know, gay marriage was so important for a lot of ways. One, to publicly, as you said, announce, you know, our commitment to one another, but also the legal rights. And it was because the laws are drafted around marriage that those legal rights are so important. But, you know, I was raised Catholic as well. And, you know, I definitely recognize the religious component to that and the impact on children. And I really think that, you know, if we were to really, you know, go down on the debate, you should really have that separation possibly. You know, if you really believe that marriage is a cultural institution, that it is before yourself and God, then, you know, the government should get out of marriage. We shouldn't be basing our laws around marriage to have those same rights and benefits, you know. But I will say, to his point, you know, childbearing, but you can also say child rearing, because, you know, I do believe I would like to have children at some point in my life. And as a result, you know, I would like to have access to those same laws as well to benefit myself and my child.
We put out a question to some of our listeners about what they thought about this issue, and we had a response from Anne, who said, "I think marriage has gotten a lot more relaxed over the last 30 years. I think a lot of people get married to have a wedding and to say, 'I have a husband.' I think people 30 years ago used to work to stay married. The community and family supported you. Nowadays," Anne says, "it's the opposite. Family and community just say, 'Get a divorce if it isn't working.'" And mm-hmm. there's no denying that divorce is easier now than mm-hmm. it once was. Do we think that's changed the nature of how we think about marriage, Deborah?
I think absolutely. If you think about women, it used to be you could take a very feminist perspective, and a radical feminist perspective of marriage is that it was started as a way to oppress women and to maintain control over women's sexuality and fertility. So it can never be an equal institution, right? So that perspective would be, it doesn't make sense for gay men and women to get married, because it can never, it is inherently a patriarchal institution. And then back to the part, what the caller talked about, I love the public and private distinction, right? So he was talking about the public component of the family, which is socializing children, and that makes total sense that should be separate mm-hmm. and different than this private, you know, what we do in the bedroom is our own business kind of thing.
Well, so this leads us to the question, I think, then of the future and what the future of marriage looks like. I mean, here's a couple of ideas that have come up in our conversation for ways that it could possibly change. Maybe there'd even be some benefit to it changing. Are there trends toward seeing an understanding of marriage and kind of the nature of how marriage works that it will continue to evolve? Do you think it'll be different in another 5 years or in another 30 years? Let me start with you, Daniel.
I do think it has evolved. I know that, you know, before coming on here, I actually spoke to my sister, and she had a lot of the same views, that she doesn't feel the need to necessarily get married, that same pressure that her and her boyfriend, who have been together for, you know, off and on for, I think, almost 5 years now, they view themselves as married in their minds right now as it is. So I think that I would like to see marriage become one, just more of a view of a couple wanting to express their love, wanting to express their commitment to each other if they feel that that's how they want to express that, but also to have it show that, you know, we don't necessarily need marriage to have that same level of commitment to, you know, the pressures of people getting married just to say I have a husband or a wife.
Sure. How about you, Catherine Hogan? You run this wedding venue. Will you still be in business in 5 or 30 years? How's marriage going to change?
Oh, well, the way I see it now is that couples do wait a little longer to get married. I think maybe coming from homes where they saw divorce, they, as Deborah was saying, that they will be a little bit more cautious, and that hopefully that will lead to more long-lasting marriages, that the idea that when you select this, you know, spouse to get married to, that you view them almost like a family member. Like, you can't divorce your sibling. You can't divorce your parents. Like, you bring them in as your family member, and you commit to them like you would commit to having a child. So I'd like to see, or I hope to see, that that trend will continue, and that people will be more responsible in terms of making those long-term choices and really truly viewing it that way.
Deborah Smith, we'll give you the last word. You're the academic. You're the expert. How will marriage be different 30 years from now?
Fortunately, academics are not very good at predicting the future. But I will say that it used to be that marriage was entry into adulthood, that you had to be married to be considered an adult. And now we consider marriage to kind of be the cherry on the top, mm-hmm. that you sort of have all of the things figured out for yourself as an individual, maybe even already have children, have your house bought, all of those things that you feel like you need to have as a healthy American in our society. And now it's the coming together. It's very much of a choice now. And I think that the choices will always be there. There's a great quote in the 1860s about how marriage is going to disappear within our next generation, and that was over 100 years ago. And so I think it's always going to be there, but it'll be changing.
Well, thanks so much. That's Deborah Smith. She's a sociology professor at UMKC. Also have Catherine Hogan here. She owns the Vow Exchange, and Daniel Osterhaus. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
In a minute, we'll talk more about relationships of a less romantic nature. A lot of people think social media is cutting into how well we interact with each other in real life. New study says that may not be true. I'm Brian Ellison. Find out more when Central Standard returns in a minute.